Hello, mothers, fathers, grandmothers and grandfathers, driving buddies and budding drivers. Welcome to episode 98 of the Radio Radar podcast. I'm subbing in for Henry Gilbert this week. I'm Ryan Teljanik, but with me I have...
Ashley Reed.
Jan Jones.
Lorenzo Valoria.
Tony Wilson.
And you're in for a very special episode today because I'm hosting by the seat of my jorts.
Yes.
oh, no.
I haven't done this in a long time, so forgive me.
Not the jorts.
Are they acid washed?
They're bedazzled.
And we're not juggling hosts, really, at all. Henry Gilbert and Lucas Sullivan are at Comic-Con this week.
Yes.
We're so jealous.
By the seat of their jorts.
So they're having some fun in the panel sun.
Yeah.
Off the nice glow of the sweaty people in front of them.
That's got to
be a
joy.
Really poetic episode, isn't
smell
it?
The smell of hot dogs in the summer sun.
You know what? We'll talk about Comic-Con in a little bit. Jan just happens to be a Comic-Con expert. And this is her first time ever on the show. She just started. Jan, when did you start? Like 2 weeks ago or something?
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so welcome to the team. Everybody
who's
listening, please audibly welcome Jan to the team. We can't hear you doing that, but you know what? It makes us feel great that you are.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
So welcome, Jen.
Hi.
We're very excited to have you. But you know what? Let's jump into this week's top seven. I don't remember if we have some sort of special sound effect that
we
does
don't
this.
Have a top seven segment yet. So once again, if you'd like to make one, send that in.
Yes, please. We would love to feature your homemade segments that intro our top seven, our news section, and the...
We have a community one.
We do
to
have a very...
Dengue-ushi, right?
Yes, we
a
do.
A very unsettling community segment.
Yeah,
that is a lot of intro.
I actually like that one
I do,
lot.
Too. You know, when you it's first cool. hear it, you're like, this is making me uncomfortable, but then it gets better.
The second time, it's just like it hooks you. Somehow.
It's got its hooks in your brain.
It's like sipping on a fine scotch, something I still can't do.
It bites you at first, but then you learn
but you
to
like
love
being
it.
Drunk, so you drink it.
Yeah.
Right. But let's
okay. We built up an immunity in the community segment, is that what you're saying?
Let's get in the top seven for the week. The top seven trippiest dream sequences in video games.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine.
Okay. Yeah. That was beautiful. Thank you for that that riveting song.
Thanks,
so we'll start with number seven, the Simpsons arcade game, the group dream world in which Homer, Marge, Bart, and Lisa find themselves fighting, I guess, their subconscious.
Giant bowling that's balls and stuff.
That's what you do in dreams.
Yeah, Henry wrote this article, and I'm pretty sure he's gotten to the end of the Simpsons arcade.
Yeah.
But
it's not an easy game to get through.
Yeah, I never spent enough quarters to get all the way through. But I have played the dream sequence, and it's got all those Simpsons things. Like you fight saxophones and Marge heads.
Yeah, well, it's like everyone's fear. Yeah. Basically,
which is themselves or an element of themselves, which is kind of
Marge
neat.
Is it's literally her face in clouds.
Wow.
That's fighting, her fear.
Lisa fights saxes,
saxophone,
and then there are nuclear radiation suit with invisible men inside. That's what Homer's fighting because he's always so nervous about melting down the entire the nuclear plant and sending.
I would be too,
as he should be.
I'd be pretty nervous in that situation too.
Yeah, I can't blame him. But yeah, I played this level as well, and it's just like this floaty little cloud land. But the thing that weirds me out about it is the fact that a lot of times you're also fighting bowling balls. Like that has nothing to do with any of these characters.
Yeah.
Unless
Homer bowls. He's a bowler. Like in the old episodes, he bowls a lot.
But is he afraid of it?
Yeah.
There's some. I mean, he did buy Marge that bowling ball for her birthday or anniversary, and she almost had the affair with the sexy bowling instructor.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what this is an allusion.
He fears what the bowling ball represents,
which is a rift in his marriage.
Exactly.
which, you know what? That's a fucked up dream.
He's grounded, but Marge is in the clouds.
What's even more fucked up is the whole family's fighting that giant bowling ball. So,
oh, my God. They all must know about it.
It's tearing them all apart.
Yeah.
It was painfully obvious to even the children.
This is way more cerebral than this game should have been.
Yeah, that got really dark. But
anyway.
Which means it's a perfect time to jump to number six.
Number six. Since we missed the number seven. But anyways.
Hey, Snake. Isn't this where you went toe-to-toe with Raven and his tank? Tell me again, how did you take that thing down anyway?
that abruptly ended after...
Yeah, you're not going to get an answer.
So Metal Gear Solid 4, The Return to Shadow Moses is the dream sequence we're talking about here. This was a really cool part because obviously in the original Metal Gear Solid, you played a Snake and you were in Shadow Moses the entire length of the game. And so this was a really cool callback to, you know, this the original Metal Gear Solid on PlayStation was kind of what really gave this made this series popular. And so it was a really, really neat nod to its my email just went off. It's a really, 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 really neat nod to that game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to remember how this exactly was set up, but like it's like you're going to Shadow Moses for some reason or another. I think you're chasing after like Liquid or something.
Liquid Ocelot.
Yeah. And then Liquid Ocelot. And then like Snake's just like chilling and then all of a sudden you're like going up in the elevator in like PlayStation graphics mm-hmm. again.
Yeah,
then you're running around as like old Metal Gear Solid like Snake model, and you're like, what the hell is happening?
It retextures everything with the old school graphics. And that's what, you know, like, not only was it a really cool nod, but it also just like, nope, you are literally playing the original Metal Gear, Metal Gear Solid.
And it also, revisiting there, has, like, one of my favorite fights from 4, mm-hmm. which was Crying Wolf, I believe was the name of that one.
It wasn't Sniper Wolf, but it was
created from Beauty and the Beast Corps. She was created from I think The Fear and Sniper Wolf. Like all the Beauty and the Beast Corps are actually they're literally fusions of older Metal Gear bosses.
Oh yeah, I guess I never really
I didn't realize
that
either.
It's obvious now.
Was that the sniper fight in 4?
She's the wolf goes prone with a sniper. It's
Yeah. Whoa. And then after that whole Metal Gear Solid 1 sequence thing, you actually get to go into Shadow Moses like in PlayStation 3 graphics, mm-hmm. which is really cool because mm-hmm. you get to see it all again.
You even you fight Metal Gear Ray again, or Metal Gear Rex.
God, I need to play this game again. I played it through, and I barely remember
any
of this
mech
happening.
Fight.
Yeah,
if memory serves.
There's giant
fight. I remember that.
Yeah, Raiden slices things in half with his feet.
Hell yeah, man! That's so cool. I loved it, and that's why I was so happy that Revengeance came into existence because I was just like, finally.
I'm still playing through that one. I need to finish that.
Oh man, the game's really good.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on.
Number 5.
All right, tried not to repeat myself on that one.
You can talk over this, just music.
Let's hear it out. Oh, so.
Henry will be really happy with this one. I'm just going to say that.
Silent Hill 3's Lakeside Amusement Park. Now, obviously, this is a familiar location to anyone that had played the Silent Hill games prior to 3. So the weird thing about Silent Hill, right, like it's this very creepy, almost like a dreamlike thing in itself as mm-hmm. a whole. But Silent Hill 3 in particular started off with a dream sequence where Heather, the protagonist, enters Lakeside Amusement Park. And it's really, really creepy. And, of course, you see Robbie the Rabbit, the mascot, that creepy-ass motherfucker.
Shows up, when that thing shows up, and I think it's in 4... Silent Hill 4, The Room, like you pretty much in between, like there are many moments where you're back in your room and you kind of peer through like a crack in the wall into your neighbor's room mm-hmm. and that rabbit is in there, but he's in the same position for like the entirety of the game, except one time when it's turned around. And it's so unsettling, just that one little change.
That's why I don't play scary games.
That's
it's just
not
like,
okay.
Yeah, it's too much. You're right.
I love it. That sounds great.
Yeah. Oh, it's really great.
Things you're all wrong.
It's all, as you heard the music there, in case you don't know, that's from the Silent Hill dog ending.
Mm-hmm.
So don't worry. It's all just, beautiful. You know, the work of an evil dog.
But yeah, the cool thing about the dream sequence, though, was that it was a neat way to go about doing the game's like opening tutorial thing. So it's kind of like familiarizing you with how to walk around and interact with objects and that sort of thing.
It's tough to make a tutorial interesting, but that's a good way to do it.
Yeah, and then, you know, she starts walking around like an empty mall and then suddenly wakes up in Silent Hill from a bizarre dream to an even weirder reality.
Nightmare.
Yeah, so
waking
really
nightmare.
Interesting thing. Next entry.
Number 4.
Bill Trinan here from Nintendo of America. Welcome to this special Tomodachi Life broadcast.
Tamagotchi life.
Yeah. So
that wasn't obvious. So this is the game that had that hilarious like 40-minute trailer. It wasn't actually 40 minutes, but it was really, really long.
Yeah.
This is basically a super weird like life simulator. Almost think of like a combination of The Sims and Animal Crossing.
That's probably the best way.
And it's just so freaking weird.
Henry always calls it a humor generator.
Yeah, a random humor generator.
Random human generator would be something entirely different, I guess.
Oh, dear.
Technically, you can randomly generate me.
Isn't that Tinder? Sorry.
A random human generator.
That is, yeah. You can swipe right to like.
Exactly.
That's usually a horrible human generator, too.
But Tamagotchi Life is a really quirky game that doesn't really have much point to it, but it is really funny because you have all these Mii's. You can import any of them. So there are, my Tamagotchi town has like Guy Fieri and Michael Jordan and Arnold Schwarzenegger and me and my girlfriend, who are complete enemies for some reason, which is really depressing.
My Mii is like mortal enemies with one of my best friends.
Yeah, you do have some control over who they befriend. Yeah. But anyways,
I set Ellen Page up with Catwoman. I was happy with that.
I think she'd be happy about that.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It depends on who the Catwoman is.
The movie might have been terrible, but
Halle Berry.
Yeah, I said Halle Berry. With Halle Berry. There you go. But the thing about the dream sequences, like if you really read into them, they kind of represent those relationships in a way. Like there's one where the Mii is just like pulling on a string indefinitely until it eventually does find something at the end, and sometimes it's a person.
Yeah.
And so that's who that Mii is thinking about at that time.
Yeah.
Like the dreams actually mean something.
Yeah. So, I mean, part of the humor of Tamagotchi Life is you have all these Mii's and they do really random things in the ways they interact with each other. So sometimes two of them will be hanging out playing with a cat, or they'll be like putting coins into a fountain jar. Right, like you can get some money from one of the areas in the game, or they'll just be having a nice deep discussion about their favorite foods. It's just like entirely random. But they also, if you check in on your Mii's, your many Mii's, while they're sleeping, you can sometimes see what they're dreaming. And so you click on the little bubbles above their head, and boom, here's this really freaking weird dream. Like Henry has an amazing picture in this article, the one about the slide, where this Mii is on a pier in the ocean. And she's just looking straight ahead as giant heads,
they're
human
just
heads,
coming out of the ocean,
just start to rise out of the ocean and stare back at her. And it's like, if that ever happened in one of my dreams, I don't think I would be comfortable going to sleep anymore.
I would wake up screaming. I can see this picture.
Just
and
wake up
shit.
Wet.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Peed your bed.
Tamagotchi Life is half humor and half nightmare inducing with stuff like this.
But the dream sequences are all so off the wall that it's impossible to watch them and not giggle yourself into a coma.
There's no normal one, like just falling.
No.
Yeah, they're
no
all
one.
So strange.
Nothing of the sort. Moving on.
Number 3. I'd been sitting at the bar for 3 hours, or about 5 years, depending on how you looked at things. I tried not to look at things. I tried not to think about when it was that my existence became less about the things that make up people's lives and more about the holes that losing those things leave behind.
Oh, good old Max Payne, you cheeky bastard.
Think pieces right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, so obviously we're talking about Max Payne here. Obviously.
Yep.
Obviously.
Duh.
Obviously. And one thing you will no doubt remember if you played the original, and I think, didn't it also happen in 2?
Where there was some kind
of sequence. He dreams quite a lot, I feel.
But the crying baby nightmare sequences. So Max Payne... Jan, are you familiar with good old Max?
I am.
He's an extreme alcoholic.
Extreme.
Due to extreme. Family circumstances. Extreme.
I think he likes scotch.
But
I like scotch.
Yeah,
I
really?
Do. Yeah.
Man, I drink some scotch.
You have so much in common.
Lorenzo loves scotch.
Yeah, I was talking to Thomas. I was like, what's his name again? Thomas, we work with him. About doing some Scotch Wednesdays, but I don't know.
You should come to my
house. I don't know
house.
How that will be work out logistically.
What if we did beer every day?
Beer days.
Beer.
I don't drink beer.
Beer week. What about wine week?
Man. You know, I'm a brown liquor girl. Give me scotch or bourbon.
I drink all of those things.
I could not hang with you guys. It's too much.
I mean, if you need your own stuff, the fridge is still full of Heineken.
Ooh.
Mm. I might have to sneak by the office fridge. Back to Max Payne. He is an extreme alcoholic. Not particularly because he enjoys the taste of alcohol, more so because his family was brutally murdered seconds before he arrived to his house to stop it. And that'll mess up a person.
And it haunts his dreams,
And it haunts his every waking moment.
Yeah.
And even his every sleeping moment. And so that results in this creepy, creepy dream where he is in his house, with endless hallways, stained with blood everywhere, and this baby howling in the background, and it is. Even as somebody who has only had two children, it is something that is really, really creepy to hear.
I remember playing through this and, running through the endless hallways was really creepy because the camera does this weird zoom thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or it just kind of stretches the hallway. And was the first one the one with the blood on the ceiling?
Yes, and it's like dripping everywhere.
And then there's like a path where you're like following this blood path through like an invisible, like the floor is invisible or something. It's like the freakiest situation. And then there's like a crib at the end of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And they pick the worst possible sound because there's nothing at all good about hearing a crying baby. Either you're pissed off at the baby for crying or you're really upset because there's a bad reason for that baby to be crying. It's just a terrible sound.
It's like it's screaming bloody murder.
Even if you love your children, as I do, hearing them cry is upsetting.
Aren't they like 4 years old by now?
They're 3.5.
Okay.
Has anybody modded in Yoshi in Max Payne's place, and at the end you reach Baby Mario in a crib?
No. Someone should now.
I hope.
That would be funny.
That'd be nice.
Yoshi sitting at the bar with scotch, too.
Listeners, do your duty. Make it happen.
All right, next entry.
Number 2.
This seriously strange hack-and-slash adventure is a disjointed mess of anime cliches, self-deprecating interludes, and the kind of outrageous jiggle physics and awkward sexism that would make even the biggest Dead or Alive fan blush.
So that was a British guy talking about Killer is Dead, one of the more recent games from Suda51.
Yes.
I have actually not played this game myself.
I haven't either.
I know Henry played it. I do have a funny story.
Well, he's not here.
He wrote the article.
He reviewed it.
The cool thing about this dream sequence, since apparently this entry will just be all of us making tangents, the cool thing about this dream sequence is that it includes a boss fight, and you fight that boss from the boss's point of view.
Yeah.
Oh,
that is
that's
really
cool.
Neat.
Yeah.
So, you know, in order to spare our friends listening to this podcast, all of our random guesses about what the hell even happened in this dream sequence, I will read what Henry wrote.
Can you do it in a British accent?
You want some nice background music?
Do your Alfred accent.
That would really piss me
off.
Mr. Wayne.
Mr. Wayne.
Some people just want to watch the world burn.
Oh, okay.
All right, here you go. Some nice music.
All right.
Go ahead. On your mark.
Okay, here we go. Ever have that dream where you're back in your childhood home, but everything is a little off? That was surprising.
I was just turning it down a little bit for you.
All right, you got the volume controls. Like your mom isn't making eggs just the way you like, and she's also a weird silhouette version of herself. And then you come across your childhood crush, only they're accompanied by a glowing unicorn that no one even acknowledges. Then a woman in red leather starts a boss fight and shoots blood at you. That is Killer is Dead's dream sequence in a nutshell. These nightmares belong to protagonist Mondo Zappa, and the dreams are some of the few moments he has left. He knows that as a child he watched a girl named Moon River drown, and that he likes his eggs over easy. It's an off-kilter segment for sure, one that includes a boss battle that drops the game's normal third-person view to instead have a fight play out through the big bad's eyes. The dream sequence is supposed to work as a major plot revelation, but it's so strange that it's tough to pin down what exactly that is, even after you finish the game. Thank you, Henry.
Moon River.
Moon River is an interesting name. So aside from the dream sequence, and I think we've told this story before, Henry and I, this game has a mini game in which you how to put this? You stare at a woman's chest and or legs, and then you have to quickly look away if she looks over at you, so that she doesn't catch you staring at her like a pervert. And then you can also
it's
give her gifts.
Strange to play.
Yeah, you give her gifts to like make her have make her affinity toward you grow, and then if you succeed, you can take her home.
Yeah, it started a huge argument of like, oh, you just give women presents and they sleep with you.
Yeah,
why does Henry always end up playing these types of games?
Well, the thing was, like, he and I saw a demo at this of this at E3 in 2013. Yeah, 2013. And yeah, we were in the. It was a behind the scenes demo, so it was like in a closed booth that nobody just walking the floor could see. And they were showing us this demo, like, and it's weird to see people that are demoing a game with a straight face show you this mini game and walk you through it and explain. Yeah, so here you have to quickly look away before the woman catches you ogling her. Oogling? Is that the word?
I think it's both.
Ogling.
Anyways, it was a really, really uncomfortable demo.
Man,
it sounds like it.
Can you imagine being one of those PR people? You just do that all day, and then you come home to like your wife or your girlfriend.
And also
a gallon
of scotch.
Yeah,
this is where the scotch comes into play.
You give them eight presents, and then they sleep with you.
You're just like, honey, I had to stare at pixelated breasts all day.
I mean, what, Tony? Does it not work like that?
No, it doesn't work like that.
Are you sure?
I've given so many presents, it hasn't worked.
All right, and that brings us to...
Number one.
Hey, Eternal Sonata. It's pretty good.
So you heard it. You heard it from a YouTuber himself, ladies and gentlemen. Go out and buy this game right now.
Muramasa guy from last week.
Oh, game good. Of the year.
And today we're playing Muramasa on a PS Vita.
So Eternal Sonata is a really freaking weird game. This is a JRPG that stars composer Frédéric François Chopin.
Chopin.
You know, the romantic era songwriter who is known for his iconic piano-heavy compositions. And he died in 1849. But even though history says he passed away from tuberculosis, Eternal Sonata suggests maybe he spent his last few days dreaming of starring in his own lengthy JRPG.
I mean, wouldn't you?
That's how I would like to go, I think.
Yeah, that would be really cool. You're just, like, dreaming, and you're in an RPG. It's, like, the best dream
ever. But the thing about the game is he's very aware that he's in a dream the whole time, so he's just kind of, like, you know, constantly commenting on these...
We call those lucid dreams.
Yeah, he's constantly commenting on these, like, really, really weird things, and he's fighting monsters, gaining XP and leveling up while he's actually dying. It is a little depressing, I think, but... Tony, I'll have you cut this section out while I figure out what the hell else to say about this game.
I was really hoping Ashley could, like, carry this, because it seems like it's up your alley.
Well, I'm not particularly familiar with this one, actually.
All right.
I'm really waiting for, like, the Brahms or Berlioz, you know, JRPG to come out, so I totally didn't play this one.
Yeah.
All right.
But the whole fact, the whole game is a dream, one in which the dreamer is consciously aware. Pretty cool, especially when the premise is just freaking weird. But
yeah.
All of the game, Eternal Sonata, is the trippiest dream in video games. So
it was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine, Salt and Pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine.
Thank you again, Tony. That's so beautiful. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk about news and previews. Stay tuned. And welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that that very brief break in which we all went and did some push-ups to get ready for this section.
Get jacked.
In case you don't know, the secret to podcasting is push-ups.
Yeah.
So I apologize for the bad jokes. Henry will be back next week. It's the only week, hopefully, in the near future in which you will be hearing me do this. Let's start with Comic-Con, because obviously that's where Henry is.
Yep.
Lucas is there.
Yeah. Lucas is there as well.
They're
deep in the thick of it.
Yeah, they're sitting in on some panels. They saw a bunch of game demos, which you can read previews for on our website, gamesradar.com. Jen, can you tell us a little bit about your experience with Comic-Con? I've never been. I can envision what it's like.
We called it the Nerd Prom.
Oh, good for you!
Yeah, I mean,
that's really rude.
Wow,
you took that one like a champ.
Don't blame me. Jen, please don't tell us anymore.
Christian Bale.
My first Comic Con was in 1999,
wow.
And yeah, San Diego. They did not even have the entire convention center at that point. And so I got to watch it just explode and blow up, and it is exhausting. It is exhilarating. It is frustrating. And wonderful. I mean, if you can ever do it, I highly recommend just doing it once in your lifetime just for the sheer spectacle of it.
Mm. It's crazy how it's like a pop culture phenomenon now.
Yeah.
It's like on E! It's on the front like cover of E! Entertainment and
yeah.
stuff. It's crazy.
Having worked in comic books, that was a really weird shift for us in the industry because we watched as, I think it was Tomb Raider that did it, basically, pop culture just took over the conventions, and it never went back. The studios realized that they had a really powerful tool here.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the only places that you can pretty much get access to your favorite creators and actors and celebrities. It's so unique. As I've aged, now I like to do Pool Con, which is basically sitting by the Marriott pool and drinking Mai Tais while my friends in the industry come visit me.
Oh, there you go.
My last 2 years, I think I went into the convention hall twice and just to buy what I needed because it is so packed.
The closest analog I think I have for Comic-Con would be PAX,
which
is just games.
Yeah.
And board games and that sort of thing. But, I'd imagine that it is the smells and sounds of PAX amplified by many.
Smells. Yes.
People joke about the unwashed masses. But these days, with all of the celebrity, with all of the pop culture, it's not terrible. It's it's probably around 3 p.m. after the halls have been going all day.
Yeah.
It gets kind of brutal.
Anyone gets smelly at that point.
Yeah, there's only so much ventilation and recycled air that they can filter in.
Right.
Plus you have the heat of the camera crews and everyone's lap. It's brutal.
So
what's your
favorite thing to do at Comic-Con? Because I've never been, but our equivalent up here used to be a WonderCon. I got to see Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher one time. That was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, the parties are really great. One of the websites did the 7 parties you must attend at Comic-Con this year, and it was kind of tragic because none of them actually involved comics.
Right.
But you would, the parties were always great, open bars and, I think my favorite Comic-Con memory, I met Pee Wee Herman and David Arquette. And the iPhone had just come out and Pee Wee Herman had an iPhone and I kept trying to open a conversation with the iPhone because I just wanted to be close to Pee Wee Herman. But
he was there showing it off?
He was at a party and he was showing David Arquette his iPhone. It was hilarious.
That's surreal.
It was bizarre. But you have a lot of moments like that because you will just run into celebrities on the street. If you eat lunch at Nobu at the Hard Rock, it's like a red carpet going by the window. You will see everybody.
I think it would be harder to do that now because, just so many people want to go to Comic-Con.
It's true.
You have to get a ticket to Comic-Con as soon as the previous year's Comic-Con ends, to get in now. So it's, just this huge thing.
I've heard all kind of tips and tricks for how to get your Comic-Con ticket.
Yeah.
None of them work.
I think that it would just be more of, the celebrities are more hidden now. And I know they walk around the floor, dressed up as, characters and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's how they get around.
Yeah,
that's actually very clever.
Kit Harington, who plays Jon Snow, was at PAX East this past year in a Minecraft Creeper costume.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
So I walked up. I knew it was him in the costume, but, of course, he's got, the security people around. So I just kind of walked up to this creeper and said, I know who you are under there. I like what you do. All right. See.
Goodbye.
I didn't want to reveal the guy in the middle of the show floor. It would have been a bad idea.
Yeah.
You should have said, you know nothing.
I know you, and you know nothing.
But yeah, I heard if you lost your badge this year, it was $200 to replace it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it's pretty brutal. But if you go just, just knows a few simple rules, know the places where to hang out, know the easiest escape routes, where to get away. I always had this fantasy that, like, Comic-Con would be the best place for a zombie attack and outbreak because nobody would suspect it. Like,
oh, God.
Because everybody's dressed up as a zombie. I mean, that would be complete chaos.
There was the Walking Dead course a year or two ago, wasn't there?
Yeah, well, that's what made me think of it. I was sitting in my room looking down, like, 23 floors to the pool
and
area.
There's just zombies walking
around. And I
around.
Could just imagine, like, a zombie, like, horde walking up to the pool and just taking everybody out in the chaos, because nobody would think of anything at first, because...
It's going to be that trailer from Dead Island.
It pretty much could be.
Oh, man. Awesome. Well, we are certainly looking forward to hear what Henry and Lucas have to say when they get back next week. I know they saw a bunch of games. They sat in on a bunch of panels, and they have lots of cool stuff to say. So look forward to hearing that next Friday. But some news did come out of Comic-Con that I remembered to write down for this. how about Halo Nightfall? Henry sat on the panel for the live-action Halo TV. Not really a TV series. It's
like a mini-series.
Yeah, like a mini-series that's only going to be on the Xbox One and or Xbox in general. And that... series is the origin story for Jameson Locke, the new Spartan in Halo 5.
Yeah, so that one screen, or not even a screenshot, it's just like art of that silver Spartan reflected with
Master Chief
on the bottom. Apparently that's some guy that's going to, his background's going to be laid out in the series, which is weird. I thought Chief was like out in the middle of nowhere. I still need to play 4. Like, I'm so lost.
Yeah. I'm really excited because it's really neat when game properties that we're really familiar with have these sorts of ways of introducing new characters and things. You know, obviously, hopefully, it's not required viewing to understand what the hell Locke is.
You never know with
That's
Halo.
That's what sucks, yeah.
He's got, like, what, 80 novels at this point?
Oh, I'm sure they'll have some kind of introduction for him in the game.
Yeah, of course they will. Like,
they're not going to pull a Kingdom Hearts on us.
But it is a really neat way to cover, like, more supplemental stuff if you're really, really into the lore.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. I don't remember when it's supposed to air, be available.
Like, this fall?
Is it this year even?
I thought so.
It must be if Halo 5's coming out next year.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
it's before Halo 5, at least.
Anyways.
Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah. So the cool thing there is, though, definitely that it is the origin story for the new Spartan, so we can kind of get a glimpse at who that man is and if he's Master Chief's friend or not. I don't know.
Friend or foe? Maybe he's like the Dark Samus to Chief.
Oh, maybe.
You would think it would be in his best interest to not try and stop the only guy who's trying to save mankind.
Yeah, and the guy that's like, destroyed like an entire civilization of aliens. I don't know if I would want to go against that guy. So
yeah. Moving on. A couple delays out of EA this week. Dragon Age Inquisition pushed back to November 18th.
Boo!
It's a bummer, but at least it's only a month.
Yeah.
Because that was slated to come out in October.
It's not a big deal.
So whatever. 30 days. I don't want to wait it, but I will because I don't got a choice.
Yeah.
I think you'll live.
The bigger one though, Battlefield Hardline pushed to sometime in 2015.
Ladies, not happy about that.
All right. Hopefully,
I'm loving the lines right there.
Yeah, that went way the fuck up.
Oh,
that's an easy fix.
So hopefully that didn't just kill you. You weren't just driving and out of sheer panic swerved off the road.
It will not be as loud for them as it was for you guys.
Okay, cool.
Anyways, Battlefield Hardline is being pushed to 2015, and. It's a little weird because, Battlefield, it seemed like it was going to get annualized, you know, with Battlefield 3, then Battlefield 4, then they were going to have Hardline this year.
I mean, they got burned so bad with Battlefield 4.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. A couple interesting things, I think, about this.
Right.
I wrote a very small story saying basically good because, to me, Hardline, they're selling it as the cops and robbers version of Battlefield, but I just don't think it really has that much of an identity. Like, it really feels... just like maybe it could have been an expansion or a mod or something. Like,
totally.
It feels like a cops and robbers mode.
Yeah, and so I think one of the things it really, really needs before it launches is a thing that makes people go, oh, yeah, that's what makes Battlefield Hardline way different than Battlefield 4 or something like that. You know, because remember the hype from Battlefield 4 was insane. Like, people were like, what the fuck? You jump out of a skyscraper as it crashes to the ground? And, like, you could just do that? That's
all
amazing.
The Levolution stuff
and
it is
changes
insane.
The stage. Whereas Hardline's like, remember that skyscraper? What if we put a crane through it?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's why like the are same 32 stuff. Robbers fighting 32 policemen? Yeah. Like, what kind of, what crime happened
Michael
here?
Michael Bay presents bank robbery.
Yeah. You know, so it's like, and I'm sure it does, like, feel a little bit different, and maybe the weapons are slightly slightly different, all that sort of thing. But, you know, I just, I don't ever look at it and say, oh, yeah, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, you know what this reminds me of is Battlefield 2 had an expansion. It was called Spec Ops or Special Ops or something like that. But this basically did the same thing that Battlefield Hardline is doing. Like, it gave players grappling hooks and zip lines, and it had this whole like little theme, but it was an expansion, but it felt like the same kind of stuff, you know. It was like it had a couple extra modes and new maps and stuff, and that's basically what Hardline feels like so far.
And keep in mind too, in case any of you listening didn't know, Hardline is not being developed by the team that made Battlefield 4.
No, it's Visceral.
So these were the dudes that did Dead Space, now doing a Battlefield.
Yeah.
Which also has the benefit of now distancing itself from Call of Duty release, too.
It does. So one of the things I'm really glad it did was move itself out of the upcoming list of shooters. I mean, we have Destiny, we have the Halo Master Chief Collection, Call of Duty, Far Cry 4, Evolve. All of those are coming out in the next, like, 3 months.
Yeah, and it would have got buried.
And out of all of those, the one people talk about the least, it would have been Battlefield Hardline.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, I think distancing themselves is really good. It also gives them time. You know, they had about a month's worth of beta time to where they can look at the stability issues. Remember, people are still pissed about Battlefield 4 not working very well, and that game came out like almost 9 months ago.
Yep.
And so it gives them some time to really look at some of those issues and make sure they're all fleshed out before it comes out. It's a lot of things that I think, you know, for me, it's really the stability and the identity. Those are the two things they really, really need to
definitely
lock down before they push it out. So, and hopefully by it coming out next year, we'll be a little bit more excited.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe.
I think I've had enough Battlefield for the last few years that, like, when they announced Battlefield Hardline, I was just like, I don't think I'm going to get into this.
Here's,
you know?
I just found it utterly bewildering. Just the entire trailer, I was like, what? I don't even know what's going on or why.
Yeah. Oh, one other thing I wanted to bring up, which I think is really, really funny. EA's VP or somebody, CEO, I don't remember which it was, but like 4 days before these delay announcements came out and said, you know what, guys? EA is shifting its focus. What we're going to do is a lot like what Ubisoft is doing now, where we're you know what? We're not going to just push a game out. We're going to make sure it's ready and ready to go. And that's the new mentality we want to have. 4 days later,
that's
two
so
delays.
Random.
Yeah, two
and
delays.
By the way,
3 days later, also, here are two major delays. So it's like, all right, I see that tricky timing you set up there.
He was setting that thing up. He just set it up, and that call just knocked it down.
Here we are, EA, the new company.
Yeah.
So
we're working fast, guys. See how fast we're working? I was just like, delay. Not ready.
Some other news. Looks like The Last of Us movie, which is, you know, now casting, right? They're casting it.
Mm.
May star Arya Stark as Ellie.
Ooh.
I love her.
Actress sure. Maisie Williams. Yeah.
Macy.
What, Macy.
They couldn't get Ellen Page?
seems like an obvious fit, yeah.
That'd be so cool.
But yeah, I just randomly saw that like on the news feeds today, so I thought that was kind of cool. Mm. Nothing any crazy. I mean, it's not even confirmed. Like, she is in talks.
Yeah.
About filling it. That would be an excellent casting choice.
But yeah, I mean,
cool. It's cool.
I think anybody who's been watching the Game of Thrones series, one of your favorite characters is always.
She's the most badass ever.
But granted, she's also awesome in the books. So it's like,
yeah.
It's not hard to make her cool.
Yeah.
It's true.
But that actress does a really good job.
She just gets to play the same character except in like apocalyptic America.
Yeah, I feel like it would be a pretty natural extension for her.
Mm-hmm. Now they just need to get Lena Headey to do, what's Joel's friend's name? Trish?
Yes.
Trish. That'd be perfect.
Who's going to be Joel?
Ooh.
Viggo.
Troy Baker with a beard.
Viggo Mortensen.
Troy Baker is too handsome and young for it to play.
Yeah.
If you've never seen that guy.
So many voices that don't match him.
Yeah, you should. If you've not seen what Troy Baker, the voice actor who's in every video game you ever play, look him up on Google. He's a handsome dude.
Doesn't look
he
like
is.
What
he
you
looks
think
very young.
If you've just played his games.
Yeah. More news. Google buys Twitch for $1 billion.
Is that confirmed
that
now?
Through?
That is confirmed.
Oh, geez. Because I remember when you first said it, it was like from sources that are familiar with the... the situation. It was like, what?
I think that is confirmed. Actually, okay. I should have looked before I...
The purchase
it,
didn't happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yes.
That's
first
crazy.
First was wow. They were in talks for it, and then it was... Yes.
My God. Google is slowly eating the tech world.
Google owns the world.
One step closer to world domination.
So, Amazon is going to own the world's commerce. Google wants to own the world in terms of platforms
Internet.
For watching things
yeah.
and using things.
And
if that
doing
makes any
things,
sense.
Yeah.
It's like Tears for Fears.
Any kind of research or anything, you're just going to Google mm-hmm. everything.
Together, one day they will collide and it will be a horrible cataclysm that will end the world.
Or one will buy the other.
And
how crazy would that be?
And one day maybe they'll find out how to make money on things like YouTube and Twitch because those are, I hear, very difficult things to monetize well.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Who knows?
Unless your name's
slap
a view on an ad is
slap an ad on the front.
Yeah.
Money.
Two more pieces of news. Congratulations to all you Origin account havers out there. You can get yourself a free copy of Sims 2 and all of its expansions right now.
Oh, yeah.
Through July 31st, just by installing Origin.
I tweeted out the link yesterday. So if you're following Games Radar on Twitter. Twitter.
Good deal. Not you should
we'll
pick
be,
it up.
We'll be sound effectless for a moment. My laptop is spontaneously restarting.
Good.
that was fun.
No more screaming for a minute.
And finally, I saved the most important piece of news for last. I can't even say this with a straight face. Sonic Boom is coming to the Wii U on November 18th.
All right.
Thank God.
When is that show coming out?
I would play the celebratory noises.
Dun, 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 dun,
that's
dun,
literally
dun,
what
dun.
I was reaching for.
That's not fair to say that. I don't even know. We don't know how this game's going to play. None of us have seen it, maybe? I don't remember.
It's that one that's connected to the new Sonic show, right?
Yes.
So that, yeah, I wonder if the show
with
is coming
like
soon.
The steroided Knuckles.
Yeah, he's all roided out, and he's got like everybody's got wraps, like they injured themselves.
They're basically...
All their hands are fucked up.
They're ready to strip up.
They all burned their hands at the same time.
Well, for these new ideas, identities, they had to get rid of their fingerprints.
Yeah.
they're the Sonic equivalent of Michael Bay's Ninja Turtles.
Oh, God. Can we talk about that for a second?
Sure, if you want.
About how we hate the new Ninja Turtles.
I'm going to watch it. We're all going to watch
it. I'm
going to
watch it.
But that doesn't mean we got to like the redesigns.
No. Us talking about it could really just be 30 seconds of everyone crying quietly to themselves.
Where's that Max Payne baby sound when you need it? Or a bottle of scotch. Either one will do here.
You know what makes me really angry is the Ninja Turtles are so huge, or Michael Bay's Ninja Turtles are like 8 feet tall. They're supposed to be like 4 feet tall. Like,
that's really weird.
They got the Sonic
legs
syndrome.
They're supposed to be giant turtles, not like... gargantuan turtles.
They're not supposed to be Gamera.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to be kaiju. So
though, wouldn't that be cool?
Teenage Mutant
would be
Ninja Kaiju.
Pizza dude, killer.
So before we go into reviews, let's real quick talk about the Destiny beta.
Yeah,
which
let's do
has
it.
Been out for well for us PS4 owners an extra weekend.
So, so cool.
Anyways,
I had
like
my good for you sound effect.
Right now, Destiny beta is still available, and now it's open to anybody. So if you have PS3, Xbox 360, PS4, or Xbox One, go install Destiny beta. Give it a try if you like first person shooters. It is fun. I like it a lot actually, and I was like, I'm not interested in this game.
Well, when you played the alpha,
yeah,
is that how you're feeling?
But it is very much, I mean, we keep joking, a cross between Halo, Destiny, or Destiny is basically a cross between, to me, like Halo, Borderlands, and a little bit of Mass Effect feel to it.
Right. Yeah, it's got all those elements in there. But they're, like, everything about it is really solid. The shooting feels really good.
The shooting, I think, feels a lot better than it does in Borderlands.
Yeah.
It feels more like an actual shooter, less like an RPG, but you still see the numbers floating.
Yeah, the guns are real weighty, so you feel like you're playing Halo. Mm-hmm. All the powers add a lot, I think, to the gameplay, especially in multiplayer, because you have to balance these, like, your like grenade, and then your special attack, and then your ultra special super thing that everybody has a, like the warlock has this big area of effect bomb thing, and the titan does this big, you know, hammer slam yeah. Area effect thing. And everybody's
the hunter's
got
like a knife throw and an incendiary grenade.
And the the super gun, right?
Oh yeah, you pull out like a flaming revolver.
Is it really called
a super gun? No, it's called. I don't remember what it's called.
That'd be a really
It's a revolver that is on fire.
Yeah,
and you shoot it.
And it's it's like one shot kill for anything.
Are
like
they flaming bullets.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet.
But yeah, the game's really fun. It's a really cool first person shooter in the structure of an MMO. But my concern will be once the game comes out. Mm-hmm. MMOs are a very weird type of game because.
Right.
Like, the leveling process is often considered the grindy, non-fun part. And yeah. then once you hit max level, that's typically when all the cool stuff starts happening.
End game content.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I wonder... I actually have had a lot of fun during the leveling parts of the beta. So
yeah.
I wonder if this will be able to overcome that. But I'm also a little concerned of what it's going to do to keep people interested once they... level up a character all the way.
Yeah, I have a feeling. I have no idea what the end game content is going to be, but I have a feeling that a lot of people are just going to play through the story content and just play a lot of the multiplayer because the multiplayer so far seems really good. Like I'm really enjoying it a lot. It's kind of like, it's an evolution of Halo.
Makes sense. Yes, it is very, very similar in a lot of ways.
Yes.
There's an article on our site right now that you can read about some of those ways. But
no, they're not similar at all.
Oh,
come
right.
on.
It's in no way similar. But it does make sense considering, like, Bungie made Halo games for how many years?
X years.
A decade.
A decade.
Now they're making a new game. They're like, cool, this is our chance to do something new.
Yeah.
And so it makes, I mean, yes, it is new, but it makes sense that a lot of their DNA is showing up here, and I think it works really well for the game.
It's good DNA, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is.
It's, like you said, the shooting's
good.
Like
it's not like Halo was ever bad.
Yeah. So very, very fun. You should download it. Check it out. It's totally free, and anybody can have access to it.
I think it's going until Sunday?
Sunday, I believe. Yeah. So you got a couple days, which is more than enough time to see all of what's in the beta.
Yeah.
So Destiny beta, really cool. We got two review sorts of things to talk about. First being The Walking Dead Season 2, Episode 4. Amid the Ruins, which I played, and I thought it was really amazing. I was really, honestly, a little surprised when I was looking through some of the other sites that reviewed the game, and it kind of was all over the place. Like, some of them gave it, like, fives and sixes, and then the others were, like, nines and tens. It's amazing.
Obvious for you why there was a split, or did you just easily fall into one camp?
Yeah,
or the
other? A lot of the complaints were that some people felt that the writing was really inconsistent, that some of the characters were suddenly very different in this episode compared to how they had been through the rest of the season.
Okay.
I didn't really feel that way. For me, it was more of like a character development thing. Like the third episode in season two ends in a very dramatic way that. Will you know? No matter how you had been prior to that, as a person, you would be very different afterwards. and so, I think for me, like I kind of more easily bought into the fact that these characters have been through a lot. Obviously, zombie apocalypse has killed almost everybody they know and love. And so, yeah, I was totally willing to buy into this thing. Like, yeah, now they're having to like really make some tough decisions. And one thing I really like about the episode in particular is that Clementine. As a character kind of really starts to transform from a child who people sometimes listen to into a character who is now the foundation of the group. Like they're all falling apart and she's the only one deciding who to pull back into the fold.
Sorry, my computer wants to update.
That's all right. And then, so it's really kind of interesting to see her now having to be the person that pulls everybody through. And one thing that I thought was really, really cool is there's like, it kind of brings up this message, this point, like, Not everybody's worth saving because sometimes they doing so can have very negative effects on the rest of your like you put maybe more people in danger than you would otherwise. So
that's pretty hardcore.
Really intense.
Is this so? This is episode 4.
Yes.
Is this the concluding episode for this this season?
Nope. There's one more. So it's the the leading up to the finale.
Ooh.
And
so
I think
clearly building up to something big.
Well, I would say one thing I'm feeling a little weird about is I sort of had a sense of how things were concluding in the fourth episode of the first season. The conclusion to this one kind of comes out of nowhere. It was a little bit weird, but obviously it will be really big because something really nuts does happen. So that's all I'm going to say about it.
No.
I don't want to spoil anything, but it's really, really good. I personally enjoyed it and thought it was by far my favorite episode of the entire season so far. Tony, you've been playing the Dark Souls 2 DLC.
Yeah, I've been playing some more of that. We talked briefly about it last week when we couldn't talk specifics.
Yeah.
I guess the thing everybody wants to know, the bosses.
Sure.
So, basically, this isn't really a spoiler thing because, like, most people don't care for plot in Dark Souls or realize it's there. But you have an optional boss that is essentially three bosses.
Oh, Jesus.
You basically enter this cave, and here comes one dude with a club, one dude with two piercing swords, and then an archer that hangs out in the back.
Sounds I think like I Dark Souls.
I remember I called Ryan in. I was like, Ryan, you want to check out a boss? And I think he stepped in the room for like 10 seconds before I was dead.
Yeah, that didn't last very long.
Yeah.
But you're liking the DLC a lot.
Yeah, but I'm really liking it. For whatever reason, well, I guess everybody sort of has a Dark Souls boss that is easy for them and not to most people, or there's a boss that they really struggle with, but other people are able to breeze through it. So one of the bosses in this is very similar to the final boss of the main game. It's just, you know, lady with a big weapon throwing spell, basically.
Mm.
And so for whatever reason, she just, like, wiped the floor with me. Corey of PC Gamer was saying he got through in just, like, 2 or 3 tries.
Huh.
So I don't know what the difference was there between the two of ours, but it's a really interesting boss fight, really only made difficult by the fact that she summons in other characters during the fight.
Yeah.
If it was just her on her own, it wouldn't be a problem. But then she actually calls in another boss from the game.
Jesus.
There's a character, boss named Velstat, he wields this giant hammer, and the actual hammer part is a bell, like a giant bell. And so he is just a complete nuisance when he shows up. He makes the fight very difficult. If you're lucky, she'll summon like these three little pigs that are totally useless.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, but it's really good. It's really, honestly, better than the main game, if I dare say, because it's much more akin to the first Dark Souls.
Hmm.
Yeah, a lot of interconnecting paths. There's a lot more discovery to it. It's not just like main Dark Souls 2, where you're like, all right, run through these three areas, fight a boss, and warp back.
Yeah.
You know, 2 is very linear. This one has a lot more exploration.
So awesome. They change the structure up a little bit in this one. That's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, the community segment. All right, everybody, welcome back. It is now time for our favorite time.
Mm-hmm.
Community time.
Community segment on Radio Radar. We read your stuff.
I love those little flourishes at the end.
They're so pretty.
First time hearing that, Jan?
I think it's really just the beginning.
That is. I think that might be my new ringtone.
I think it's really just the beginning that throws me off really hard.
Very strong.
Yeah. It's like as soon as it starts to transition into...
Oh, that's the wrong sound effect.
Community.
Right there. Yeah. That's the part. That's the one that weirds me out. Anyways, before we begin, we do have a correction.
Oh, do you not have it?
Oh, no, I do. I thought we had a correction soundtrack.
Oh, I don't have a correction sound. Oh.
That's all good.
Here, we'll do this.
Shut up, fool!
All right, there you go.
All right, so we do have a correction for one Henry Gilbert, who is absent. So we will apologize on his behalf. this one comes from our community friend, Spadeslick, who says, Gilbert refers to the grave mine from Halo 2 as a giant talking plant. But a grave mind is just a collection of bioorganic mass of thousands of flood that eventually gains self-awareness. More of a giant Lovecraftian tentacle monster, all things considered. Signed, one of the few people that actually gives a shit about Halo's lore. Thank you, Spadeslick.
He totally looks like a plant, though. He looks like the guy, the plant from that Rick Moranis movie.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Feed me, Seymour.
Yeah. Yes,
that would be Audrey.
Yeah.
Feed me, Master Chief.
Yeah.
Ugh. That's what he is. Really weird. Thank you, Spadeslick. We will let Henry know the second he walks in the door.
Yeah.
So last week we asked, for our question of the week, what classic arcade game that you have particularly happy memories of? Jan, do you have anything to this you'd like to add before we read the community responses?
Ooh, classic what... What?
Just any fond memories of playing an arcade game. Any arcade game.
Oh, see, I love Big Game Hunter. I want to shoot, like, bears in the face. I want to, like, hit things in the leg and watch them, like, limp off into the woods.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah!
Now, let me clarify this. I don't hunt in real life. I would never think of shooting a real animal, but a virtual bear, yeah, you're toast. Mm. I used to actually kind of have that as a barometer when I would date someone. I'd be like, let's go to Dave and Buster's and play Big Game Hunter. And I would kind of judge the reaction of, you know, my brutality.
There you go.
Just watch him limp
off. Such happy memories.
I'm just envisioning Jen shooting a virtual bear in the kneecaps and then turning and staring with a blank look on her face.
Judging them.
Isn't this fun?
How do you react to this potential person that I would be maybe interested in dating?
And I usually had like 3-inch heels and like a dress on while doing it to really just
to throw people off.
Exactly.
Best reaction to that?
I've been on dates where the guys are just like, oh my god, they just can't even handle it and they won't play. And yeah.
Huh.
It's virtual bears, guys.
Games are.
Yep. Yeah. Awesome. Well,
monster.
We got lots of really good responses for that question. So we're gonna pass around the circle Kumbaya style and read some of your responses. We'll start with Clever Girl, user Clever Girl, who says, just like Ashley, my favorite arcade game was The Lost World Jurassic Park. We used to have lock-ins at the local Brunswick bowling alley, and that was the game I spent the most time on. As a young, aspiring paleontologist, I was entertained by the experience of shooting dinosaurs that I might one day study. I remember...
I like this girl.
I remember hopping into the Jeep with friends and screaming as we fended off waves of velociraptors with shotguns. Thank you, Clever Girl, for your response.
So good. Such a good game. We have Darth Ender X, or Darth Ender 10. We'll go with Darth Ender X. Mm. When I was pretty young, I was at some sort of Chuck E. Cheese type place playing Double Dragon. One of the employees who worked there was going around emptying tokens out of the machine, and when he got to mine, he opened it up and left it open and joined the game with me. We just sat there with the machine open, reusing the same tokens over and over, and ended up beating the game. One of my only 2 beat-em-ups I ever beat in the arcade, the other being The Simpsons.
Ooh.
So he got the dream sequence.
Yeah. That sounds like a badass arcade employee.
Yeah.
All right. Pork Fried Rice 7. Yes.
Yes.
I'm really hungry now.
Pork Fried Rice 1 through 6 was taken, apparently.
There must be something about pulling teeth and playing games. My dentist had a basement full of arcade games, but the one that stood out to me was Sonic Fighters. I would literally make my mom get there 30 minutes early just to play. If you haven't played or heard of it, look it up. It's pretty poorly done 3D fighting game, but something about landing a punch and seeing those rings fly out made it special to me.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Aww.
That game.
Aww. Such sweet childhood memories of beating the crap out of people.
Play that game at a hockey rink.
All right, Super Giraffe said... there was that really big Star Wars arcade game. Yes, that was my favorite. That let you play through different scenes from all 3 movies, and it was at the local Chuck E. Cheese. I didn't get to play it a whole lot because Chuck E. Cheese was mostly a party place, and childhood rules state that older kids and birthday kids get to go before you. I don't know what you're talking about, but I did.
Lorenzo just muscling his way.
I did watch the game a whole lot, seeing where people failed so that I could get better when my birthday eventually rolled around. I'd usually lose, though. That game was cool because. Yeah.
I could never get past Vader or you could, Django.
Yeah. Django. Boba. Oh my god.
Boba,
this is
what?
The original trilogy.
Sorry.
But you get to lightsaber duel those guys, and it was like the best. I loved it. It was
really good. Which one did you start with? Was the question? Because you could do Hoth, Endor, or
Yavin. You start off chronologically. You go with Yavin. You fight Boba Fett between Empire Strikes Back, and then you go to Hoth, and you fight. After the second level you beat, you'd fight Boba Fett, and then when you beat all 3 of them, you would fight Darth Vader.
Nerd.
Oh, good for you!
I hate you.
I agree with you. That game is really fun.
That was cool.
And our winner, although apparently I can't call them winners because that shows favoritism.
Mm. That's true. So please reword.
So our favorite answer
yes.
this week.
That shows favoritism pretty hard, too. The person we selected
person
at random.
Getting a prize,
our random selection.
All right, fair enough, is Ghost Rider, who says, the game that I have the best memory of is Virtual Fighter 2. Not for the game itself, but for what it represented at the time. Allow me to explain. Back in 1996, I won tickets for a friend and I to go to Sega World at London Trocadero. It was 8 floors with 400-plus arcade games, 7 indoor rides, and also had stuff like bumper cars. We'd heard that it was always being updated, the latest games, and even had 8 of the ride-in Daytona machines all hooked up together for tournaments, so you can see why we were excited about getting these tickets. The highlight, though, was when me and my mate walked up to the first game cabinet, Virtual Fighter 2, to test a rumor. We pressed the start button, even though we put no money in, and suddenly realized that all of the games were free to play. As kids, that blew our frickin' minds.
Aww.
Very, very cool.
Very reminiscent of California Extreme.
Ghost.
Yeah.
Ghost Rider?
Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider.
Let's ride the whip.
Nick Cage's handle.
Congratulations. We will send you a prize if, in exchange, you send us an email at radioradar@gamesradar.com. So send us an email. Let us know what consoles you have, or if you have a PC or any handheld gaming devices. We'll hook you up.
We'll send you a Virtual Fighter arcade cabinet.
can't
promise that.
No, that one might be a little bit outside of our ability. But
shipping cost on delivery.
Oof.
Send us an email. We'll make sure you get something cool. This week's question of the week, we talked a lot about dreams. So I want to know, what is the weirdest dream you've ever had that you can actually talk about without offending somebody?
Hmm.
It was all a dream.
All right.
Who wants to go first?
Whoever wants to start. I got to think of mine.
I got to think of mine, too.
We can also
we all have a
think in silence for a second, and then we can cut this thinking part out.
Yeah.
Or I can fill the gap with some music if we need to think.
And let's not. Oh, no. Oh, God. I have a recurring... Well, I used to have a recurring dream where my teeth were falling out, and it would start with a loose one, and then they would all start falling out, and then it just... Yeah. Oof. So that was really... That's probably the weirdest dream that I've had.
That is unfortunate.
It's real unsettling.
So this one, I don't even know how to characterize this dream, but as someone who's basically slept poorly their entire life, I have a lot of really weird dreams. So basically I had this dream where I was essentially climbing up like a pagoda. So it's like a tower with multiple distinct levels. And for some reason, each level was like a distinct terrain type. Like you went up the stairs and all of a sudden you're at this giant lake and you're avoiding like big eels swimming around. And then when you went up to the next level, this one was a mountain. And you went up another one, it was a forest. So I have no way to rationalize that dream. But yeah, I was like almost climbing through different like Mario courses on the way up this tower.
Huh.
It's really cool.
That is strange.
Yeah.
I've got one. And just a little background on this. When I was a teenager, I would do deliveries for my mom's bookkeeping business. So I often had just these boxes of files in the back of my car. You need to know that for this dream. I don't remember too much of it, but I do remember that for some reason I was out in the woods. And out in the woods, there was a gym where there was a satanic swimming team doing a synchronized swimming tournament.
That sounds amazing.
Did they form a pentagram in the water?
Kind of, but I know I was asked to join in, and I almost really messed up one of the tricks and got myself killed, but it was okay, and I made it out, and we, like, won red ribbons or something. And then when I went back outside, I saw that the wind had opened up my car door and was pulling a box of my mom's work files out of the car and throwing them in the air. And to me, for some reason, I found this the most horrifying... it was the most horrifying thing I could imagine, because in my dream, I knew that those were so important that I would basically die if they went away. And I just remember shrieking, like, bloody murder in my dream, like, no! And then I woke up and... Yep. Yes, exactly like that. And then I woke up and was like, oh, all right. That was weird.
Gosh. God, you know, it's funny. Now that I asked this question, I'm struggling to remember any of my weird dreams. I know I've certainly had them. I guess one time I did dream that, and it was one of the ones where you wake up really panicking, like legit, like you're really, really freaked out by whatever you just dreamt. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't really anything to wake up panicking about. Like, it was my mom and dad were both vampires, And the only way to save myself was to eat as many string cheeses as I could.
That's how you kill a vampire. You didn't know that?
So it's like I had a fridge of them, and I had to just keep eating them until they went away. And that was that was a weird dream.
I've been thinking this entire time. And I'm pretty sure, I have this issue all the time because Miljean, my girlfriend, she has vivid dreams. She knows, exactly what happens in all of her dreams, and she tells me stories all the time. And I'm just like, I don't know what I was dreaming last night. Yeah. I don't think I do dream. Is that medically healthy?
You only remember them if you're interrupted, I believe. I don't know how that works, but apparently that's the case.
I don't know. I don't know about that. Honestly, I cannot remember anything.
That's fair. But listeners, if you remember one of your weird dreams, please drop us a note in the comments. We will gather five at random.
You're asking for some weird stuff.
We'll gather five at random that we can read out loud. Then we will choose at random again a person who is... just happens to be luckier than the others and send them a prize. So leave those comments in the comments section for your chance to win comment of the week next week on Radio Radar, which, again, Henry will be hosting. I will not. So please do come back.
We would love
for you to come listen to us talk about random things again. But that'll do it for this week's episode of Radio Radar, number 98. Wow, we're coming up on 100. So.
Ooh. Are we doing something special?
Yeah, we're going to do something.
I bet Henry has something planned.
We'll do something special. So so be sure to be ready for that in 2 weeks, I guess.
Prepare.
Anyways, follow us on Twitter at GamesRadar.com. Come to our website at GamesRadar.com. Follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, our weekly live streams. Wednesdays afternoons from 3:30 to 5 Pacific.
Those are all / Games Radar, of course.
Yep. And also, I know Henry would request this if you were here. Please review us on iTunes. Leave us some neat 5-star reviews with the reasons you like listening so that maybe other people will listen, be inspired by your words, and come hear us speak. But thank you so much for listening this week. We will catch you guys next week. Let me think of a good... way to exit this. I can't use Henry, so I'll say,
you could try.
On the behalf of my two children, who I love very dearly, they would like you to know, thank you, and until next week.